Chapter 8.
When the Wanderer came into the pier, Tyr was already waiting at her spot on the railing. In addition to the normal crush of sailors and longshoremen and merchants and fishermen and scattered noblemen, the piers of Big Jasper were crammed full of small folk desperate to find out if their loved ones had made it home. At the same time, there was a crush of Hrothgari soldiers, loading ships to go join the fight that Tyr and her friends were just returning from. The ship's passengers crowded around midships where the plank would be lowered. Tyr hopped up on the railing, one hand holding a rigging line to keep her balance. She stepped outside the railing, grabbed the hemp webbing in both hands, and rolled down. It was a brief flash of joy that she even remembered how. Her early lessons had included acrobatics daily, but since she'd started practicing with the Black Guard, there had been none. Clinging to the webbing, Tyr could already see their pier was lined with people desperate to hear more news. Andros Gael's flagship was the first of the mangled fleet to make it home. Word of the defeat had already reached the Jaspers by homing pigeon, but the people were hungry for details. The ship came to rest against the pier with a bump. A sailor balanced next to Tyr on the webbing grinned at her and hopped off first, running to secure the lines on massive cleats. Tyr hopped off a moment later, not able to jump quite so far with her short stature, and plunged into the surging crowd of gossips, friends and families, and food vendors and wine sellers, eager to find those eager to cleanse their palates of hardtack and stale water. Being swallowed by an uncaring crowd was an odd relief. Tyr was short enough that she disappeared. Her acrobatics and fighting teacher back in Arbornia had been only a little taller than Tyr, and she'd encouraged her to explore crowds, to get to know their moods. From the angry crowd streaming out of a hippodrome after a horse race where their favourites had lost, to the eager crowd meeting the arriving dancers and menageries of exotic animals for the Odes Sunday festivals. There was an awareness you could cultivate only in the claws of such a beast. 1,000 or 10,000 bodies might move, but you could only be aware of perhaps a dozen immediately around you, especially if you were small. And you had to be most aware of your own movement. There was a mesh point, a fuzzy line where your movement can be assertive, even rude, without being taken as aggressive. There was a timing. A momentary sharp annoyance could be ignored if you were gone by the time the person you jostled hard turned to find you. Tyr ducked and pushed and surged and slithered through the bodies, her form fluid, her mind submersed fully in her body. Her trainer, Magister Lilyfield, with a body like a young woman's and her face craggy as the red cliffs, had even wanted to take Tyr and her master's daughter to experience a crowd in riot in the darks, the wretchedly poor Angari ghetto that had persisted for centuries in Odes. But Tyr's master would never let her. The familiar beauty of the Chromeria's seven towers, gleaming in the sun, brought no joy to Tyr today. Tyr had nowhere to be. Commander Arnfist had said only to his black guards, "Take the day. Tomorrow, dawn at the field. As usual." A restless energy filled Tyr. She needed to wander. It was good practice. The better she knew the city, the easier her black guard training would be. But today there was something she needed to do. She felt herself clutching at that damned vial again, using up a precious hand that could help her maneuver through the crowd. "Too much thinking, T." She was just making it out of the docks area when a man bumped into her. She'd moved enough to merely brush past him. It could only be deliberate. But he was gone, and there was something in her hand. Tyr turned, and stationary lost her momentum, lost her rhythm. The crowd spit her out into the bazaar adjacent to the docks. She hadn't even seen the man. Had seen a dark cloak, maybe a greyish tunic. Damn, it was gone. Like she was an amateur. She moved out of the stream of people and looked at what was in her hand. A note. She knew immediately she wasn't going to like what was written there. "Tyr, look in peril. Now." Tyr's formal lessons in her special colour had been brief, but Magister Marta Martens had pounded into her that seeing a woman's pupils grow until the whites of her eyes disappeared was not merely disconcerting for others, it was terrifying. That manipulation of the eyes was what had to be done to see peril, which sat on the spectrum as far below sub-red as sub-red was below visible red. In the past, she'd dilated, then constricted her pupils quickly, but it was tiring. Now Tyr put on the darkened spectacles Commander Ironfist had given her and relaxed her eyes. Father. Father. The first place she saw Parrell was written across the chest of a broad-shouldered Chromeria guard. The words, shimmery, floating, lighter than air and delicate, glowed. Bribed. Her chest tightened. What? Why? She was suddenly passive, standing like a mark, agape, like a new arrival to the Jaspers, gawking rather than moving, working, planning.
Help you, miss? The guard asked, noticing her gaze.
Tyr shook her head and ducked past him. She strode into the market where a herald standing on his small box looked at her. Floating above his head was one word. Ours. Had he stared at her? Who were they? What were they doing? Why were they showing her this? It obviously meant they had a Parrell drafter. A skilled one. More skilled than Tyr to make words that persisted. Or one very nearby who was placing these beacons mere moments before she arrived. On a wall down an alley, the words, This way, Tyr. She froze. On another wall, We won't hurt you. On another wall, there was a puff of released light as a man leaned a hand against the wall where the ephemeral words had been placed. Only we can. The rest was gone, and even those tore and disappeared as the man shifted his hand, unseeing. Tyr's heart pounded. Breathe, Tyr. This is how people go lunar. Seeing things no one else sees, imagining conspiracies. But madmen are mad because what they see isn't there. Tyr had only seen two other Parrell drafters in her life, Magister Martens, who'd given her a handful of lessons at her former owner Aglaia Crassos's behest, and a man who stabbed Parrell into a woman's neck and left her seizing to death. The alley was right there. This way, Tyr. That man, that assassin, had used solid Parrell to kill, like in the stories. Magister Martens had sworn that solid Parrell was impossible, or at least that she couldn't do it. If Tyr could learn to draft solid Parrell, she could defend against it, right? Perhaps these people could teach her. Paralyzed, indecisive, passive, and hating herself for it, Tyr looked down the alley. Parrell's greatest strength was that no one could see it except a handful of people in the world. If someone else could see their murders, those assassins lost their greatest weapon, which made Tyr a threat to their power. Tyr had seen an assassination. Perhaps they feared she'd seen the assassin too. So, Tyr, do you isolate yourself with a man you know has murdered an innocent before, and who is threatened by your very existence? Putting the matter that way made what remained of Tyr's curiosity shrivel from a big succulent grape to a nasty little raisin. Tyr hated raisins. Loved grapes. They weren't the same thing at all, no matter what people said. If the man had wanted to simply murder her, he could have done it already. With his Parrell messages, he'd proven that he could move nearby without her noticing him. So he wanted to get her alone first. Why? It couldn't be for something good. The man was a murderer. If your enemy wants it, don't let him have it. She ran. Tyr got a few startled looks as she bolted, but she didn't care. As long as no one shouted, Thief! No one was going to care much about a young girl running. She hit the next busy intersection and slipped through the crowd there as fast as humanly possible. She slid between a yoke of oxen and the cart piled high with hay they were pulling before the man driving the team could even squawk. She ran along the lip of the little fountain at the centre of the intersection and dodged through the line gathered for the water. She ran toward the next street, then stopped, backtracked a few paces, and dodged into an alley. She ran down that alley, nearly slipping on the garbage and slops, turned the opposite way down the next street, and turned up the next alley. It started misting rain. Tyr hadn't even noticed the clouds gathering. She took off the dark spectacles, dropped her pack at her feet, flipped her cloak around so its muted blue side was out, put the pack back on, but in the front, and pulled the cloak on over that. She pulled up the hood and joined the streams of people hurrying in the rain. It was harder to modify your gait when you were rushing. Throwing her hips around to mimic a curvier woman was easy for her at a walk. She could merely bring her steps together as if walking a rope, doing that while half jogging as if to get out of the rain. She wasn't that good. She began rummaging through the pack as she walked. She hadn't brought much she could use for disguises to wear, but she did have a bright yellow shawl and a scarf. At the next intersection, she ducked into a merchant's stall as if using it to cut a corner into another alley. She dropped the hood, pulled out a red scarf. Or maybe it was green. The squad liked to play its little jokes on each other, and knowing her problem with colours, none of them would tell her straight. She bound the scarf around her hair and threw the shawl around her shoulders, tying it quickly. She ducked her chin and then walked back out the way she had come, holding the cloak shut and using the bulk of her pack on her front to make it look like she was pregnant. She put a hand on her belly to complement the disguise. Tyr hated slow disguises, hated not making a speedy exit. But so did everyone else, and that was why this kind of disguise could be so effective when fleeing. She walked right by a tall man in a grey cloak who cut through the shop and headed into the alley. Maybe it was a coincidence. Maybe he was just a man hurrying home in the rain. After two agonizing blocks, at a slow, deliberate pace with a hand on her swollen belly but not too much waddle, Tyr ran again, but not home. She ran to the brewery where Marta Martens had said she'd taken a room. The brewery, the Maiden's Kiss, was housed in a squat, square building. It was whitewashed, like almost all the buildings on Big Jasper, with a domed roof. This one was a shocking pink. The wooden doors were plain except for a stylized maiden in profile, offering a kiss. There was no text. Tyr knocked firmly on the door. An apprentice opened the door, a young girl not past 10 years.
"Is this where Marta Martens takes a room?"
Tyr asked. The girl's big brown eyes went bigger. She hesitated.
"Can you wait here? Back in 2 shakes of a lamb's tail."
Odd one. And Tyr didn't like people acting odd when her life was on the line. Her throat was still tight, but she moved that tension to her body, readying herself for attack. She knew being aware but loose was faster, but there was no way she could find that calm right now. She looked around in the rain, measuring everyone, but there were few people on the streets now and the rain was coming down harder. Tyr's last talk with Magister Martens hadn't gone well. The older woman thought that even talking about the possibility of the Parul assassination would invite all Parul drafters to be hunted down. And Tyr had lost the Magister's tutorship briefly thereafter, when Andros Gael had somehow gotten Aglaia Krassos to sign over Tyr's slave papers, and she hadn't seen Magister Martens since then. The door opened again, and a wiry woman in an apron gestured Tyr in.
"Bell," the woman barked, "leaving a visitor out in the rain? Where's your manners, girl?"
Little Bell's face fell. She bolted.
"Weeper, she is," the brewer said.
She sighed. She wore a headscarf, not unlike a man's cotre, to hold back an impressively large crown of brown hair while she worked. And she was obviously working. Her skin shiny with perspiration, the veins on her thready forearms popping out.
"I got work to watch, so apologies for being abrupt. But what's your name and what do you want?"
"Tyr. Addressed you.
I came to see if my old magister, Marta Martens, is here."
Tyr had pulled her own wet scarf off her head and shook out her cloak, revealing the pack over her stomach.
"Ha! Thought you were 6 months on, and I figured she'd have told me if that was so," the brewer said, nodding to Tyr's fake belly. "Marta's gone. And you're not the first to come asking for her. I'll tell you what I told him, because it's the truth. Good tenant, a bit tetchy, but a good woman. I don't know where she went. She lost her position at the Cromeria. That was the only reason she was here, so I didn't see nothing amiss in her leaving."
The brewer walked to a counter and reached underneath it.
"But I'll also tell you this. She left a note that I was only to give to a girl named Tyr. Just so you know, the man who came asking after her offered me money if I'd detain you."
Tyr was ready to fight. She shifted her gaze from the woman's face to her midsection. Motion comes from the core. Let your peripheral vision see everything else.
"I didn't take it. I'm not a savage, and there was something funny about him. Red hair in a fringe, balding, odd necklace. Barely saw it, but my papa used to pull teeth. That necklace was all human teeth. Something nasty about that I'd rather not know. Read your letter quick and go. I wouldn't put it past him to be watching even now. Oh, and don't fold the note. Marta was particular about that. You can use the back exit if you want."
To reach the back exit would require Tyr to walk through an unfamiliar building, away from the public, isolated and vulnerable. Maybe the woman was being as helpful as she seemed. After all, she didn't have to announce that the man had been here. But Tyr had been a slave too long. She wouldn't put herself at anyone's mercy. She took the letter carefully and opened it slowly, keeping an eye on the brewer.
"You can burn it in the fire if you like," the brewer said. "I got wort on. Oh, hold and watch you, girl."
The brewer turned her back and went back into the shop. "Tyr," the letter read, "my work with you is done. I've learned of my brother falling very ill.
so I'm heading back to my family farm in Mellons. My apologies for leaving so abruptly, but I'm sure our mistress will take care of you. Or Holland's blessings on you.
That was all. It was signed with her name and carefully folded. So far as Tia knew, Marta Martens didn't even have a brother. She immediately widened her eyes full to Parol. Fraying apart, now that it was exposed, there was something written in Parol. No wonder Marta hadn't wanted the letter folded. It would have destroyed the secret message.
It's all true. The killings, everything. The Order of the Broken Eye is real, and now they're after you. Orholm, forgive me for leaving you alone in this, but there's no fighting these people. Run, Tia.
Marta Martens.